What's Donald going to say about Melania next, though?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're back with another week of fantasy off-season, pre-season content. Going to be carrying over from the podcast we did on Friday where I looked at players who could potentially find themselves in worse situations this season in the Eastern Conference. Today we're going to be looking at the Western Conference and players who find themselves in suboptimal scenarios for this upcoming season. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We'll start talking about that, but just a reminder that the Red Rock Dynasty League drafts, rookie drafts all started. Some of them have finished and going to be looking at some ADP data for those later in the week. Some of the new Red Rock Dynasty Leagues have started drafting. The Gary Payton division started today. The Mark Blunt division started today. I think there was probably one more that that actually started today. Billy Owens, I believe, is starting today as well. So three of those dynasty leagues are kicking off. So good luck to you if you are in those leagues. Let's talk about these players who do find themselves potentially in worse situations heading into this season. And we'll start with the Dallas Mavericks and Wes Matthews. Matthews last season played almost 34 minutes per game and was the 106th ranked player overall for the Mavericks, averaging almost 13 points with 3 rebounds and 3 assists. He wasn't efficient, shooting just 40% from the field. 38 from 3 is pretty good, but overall a true shooting of 54%. But of course, the Mavericks' backcourt rotation, it looks a little different this season. Yes, Yogi Ferrell has gone to Sacramento, but of course Luka Doncic comes in, and I imagine that Doncic will be starting alongside Dennis Smith in that backcourt, and that's either going to mean one or two things, that Wes Matthews moves to the bench, a possibility, or he pushes up to the three with Harrison Barnes, the pencil, moving to the four. And I think that probably that's the most realistic scenario, with Dirk Nowitzki moving to the bench. We'll have DeAndre Jordan starting at center. There will still be some Jordan, Nowitzki, Barnes lineups, which pushes Matthews again to the bench. And we also have to realize that although Wes Matthews isn't a high usage player necessarily, with Doncic, with Smith, with Barnes all in that lineup, then his spot in the pecking order goes down, and that usage of 17.7% from last season, I believe, will fall. He will also turn 32 at some point this season, so that's obviously a likelihood of a dip in efficiency even further. And something that had increased Matthews' value over the past couple of seasons was an increased responsibility with the ball in his hands. Now, of course, with Doncic in that role, playing basically that exact same role, Matthews is going to have even fewer opportunities to get assists. And by no means is 3 assists per game a huge amount, but he would have stretches that get 4 per game at times, and I don't think he's going to have that same level of opportunity for this coming season, as he just doesn't have the ball in his hands as much, with Doncic getting more of those assists along with Dennis Smith Jr. So I think that Matthews, another year old, or a player coming in playing ostensibly his position, he's still going to have value. He's still probably going to play 30 plus minutes, whether that's as a starter or as a bench guy, but it's just one step down the pecking order, a reduction in assist numbers, potentially a reduction in efficiency numbers as well, and all that could hurt his overall value. So I don't think anyone could make the argument that Wes Matthews is in a better position this season, and I think his value does dip on this Dallas Mavericks team for the coming 2018-19 season. The Denver Nuggets. Farton Will Barton is someone who I have talked about quite a bit on this show, in terms of someone who I do think can lose some value. And you might think that that's crazy. He signed a new contract, 4 years, $54 million. Obviously, the Nuggets believe in him. I believe that that was an overpay. But you could say, well, you know, just getting someone back onto your team is key. And he was a pretty useful player last season, put up some pretty strong numbers the majority of the year. But the thing that bothers me here with Barton's value heading into this season, I think you'll find him getting overvalued in certain areas, and that's because we do have, or in the general community has, a reliance on looking at players as starters, by meaning that that increases their value. Now, he is going to move from a bench role into being a starter for this season. And people go, oh, he's going to be starting now. And that's true. But Barton did play 33 minutes per game last season coming off the bench. So do you think he plays more than that this season? You could make the argument that yes, he does. And I wouldn't have too much of a worry with saying that with him moving into an extra minute in that role. But what we have to realize is last season he was coming off the bench as a point guard. He was playing a big chunk of his minutes without Nikola Jokic, without Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Without the blue arrow, Jamal Murray. And without those guys around, he was able to thrive. He was able to get a higher usage, a higher assist rate. He was able to do more things. But if he's in a lineup with Harris, with Murray, with Jokic, and with Paul Millsap, he's the fifth best player in that lineup. So he's going to have the ball in his hands less. He's going to be taking less shots if there was a competent coach involved. And Barton understood his role, and that's still a concern because he still may take dumb shots. But his usage rate was 6 percentage points lower when he played with Murray, Jokic, and Barton as opposed to when he was on the court without them. And his opportunities to be on the court without them this season are going to be fewer. And the thing is, when he's on the court without them, he'll be sharing it now with Isaiah Thomas, a guy who will have the ball in his hands more, who will take more shots, who will get more assists. So Barton's role as that primary offensive initiator, which he had last season, it's all but disappeared. He's not going to be playing that role really anywhere close to the amount that he was last season, and that's going to impact what he's able to do. He was the 53rd ranked player last year, and I think that there's a legitimate chance that he doesn't get really anywhere back to that level and could fall. Yeah, maybe he falls outside the top 80. Now, it might not be a precipitous fall, but I think it's going to be large enough that people do end up overdrafting Will Barton in a lot of fantasy drafts. Let's move on to the next one, and that is the Golden State Warriors. And it was hard to find someone on the Warriors who I thought was necessarily going to take a big step backwards. So the player I've gone for here when looking at the Warriors is Draymond Green. And you have to hear me out a little bit here with Draymond. He played 33 minutes per game last season in 70 games. He is 28 years of age, and he seems to be not a player that's necessarily going to age particularly well. He's not a great shooter. It's all his defensive work, his athleticism, his ability to protect the rim, which could fall away at any point. And of course, the Warriors did bring in DeMarcus Cousins. Now, we're not expecting Boogie to play in October or November or even December and maybe not even January. But by the time we get to the fantasy playoffs in March, perhaps it's in April in your league, and if it is, change it, make it into March. Maybe Boogie's there. Maybe Boogie's playing 27 minutes a night when it comes to that point in time. And perhaps him there getting more rebounds, getting more block shots, protecting the rim a little bit more than what Draymond did, and having a legitimate center there as opposed to piecemeal rotations like Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee, perhaps that could have an impact on Draymond's numbers for this upcoming season. Maybe they're fine to begin the year, but I can see at the end of the season, his already low usage could drop even further. Maybe he sees those block numbers dip a little bit more as well. And perhaps they can be a little bit more cautious with Draymond and not have to play him at center as much in the regular season when Cousins returns. Not that he played a huge chunk there last season, but it was still a sizable amount, and he does put up better numbers when he is playing in that center position, especially in terms of his shot blocking ability. So it was hard to find someone on the Warriors who I thought was going to take a significant step backwards, but if it's going to be someone, I think it can be, or it could be, Draymond Green. An extra year older, the presence of Cousins there, working with a high quality center who's going to be playing a lot in that position and taking away some of those defensive numbers and perhaps rebounds that he gets is also a concern. And one of the other things that Draymond does have in value is his high assist numbers. We have to remember DeMarcus Cousins is a guy that was getting 5 assists per game, and he handles the ball quite a bit. So even if that takes half an assist, 0.8 assist, 1 assist away from Draymond, that could drop him 3, 4, 5 spots in the rankings. You lose 0.1, 0.2 blocks. Does that lose another 4 or 5 spots? And he could find himself from being a top 25 sort of guy to being a guy outside the top 30, from a second round to a third round player. And while it's not a dramatic fall, there are a few things that make me think that perhaps Draymond's season could be a little bit worse than what it was last year. The Houston Rockets was another team that I found it a little bit harder to find someone who finds themselves in a worse situation. I went with Ryan Anderson for them, not necessarily because of players that arrived or anything like that. They basically swapped out Trevor Ariza and Luke Marmute for Carmelo Anthony and James Ennis, guys that will probably play in similar similar roles and similar playing time. But Anderson, towards the end of last season, and especially in the playoffs, saw his playing time reduced significantly. Now, last year, over the course of the year, he did play 26 minutes per game. I think he's going to really, really struggle to get anywhere near that. The Rockets also brought in second-round pick from last season, Isaiah Hartenstein. Not that he's going to be playing tons and tons of minutes or anything like that, but with Mike D'Antoni's reluctance to play Ryan Anderson, we could see even fewer minutes there. We'll have PJ Tucker, Carmelo Anthony, Jim Ennis playing a lot of those minutes at the three and the four, and that's going to pretty much eliminate Anderson, I think, from playing at the four at all. And with Hartenstein, maybe Joe Chi takes a step forward as well. It could really limit what Ando can do, and I think he's going to struggle to be a top 200 player this season. In fact, he wasn't a top 200 guy last season. Only 9 points with 2 threes, didn't shoot the ball well from the field, just 43% overall, and of course does nothing with assists, steals, and blocks. And I think that could actually go back further this season. Again, not really anything to do with players that arrived, because it is pretty much a straight swap of Melo and Ennis for Ariza and Marmute, but just the way that D'Antoni tends to value Ryan Anderson. He is 30 years of age as well now, so that is a concern also with Rhino. So I do think it's not necessarily going to be a great situation for him for this upcoming year. The Los Angeles Lakers, let's talk about them. Kyle Kuzma, he was one of everyone's favorite rookies last season, off the waiver wire, parlayed a fantastic summer league and preseason into an extremely strong start to the season. I kept railing on about the future MVP, that the efficiency wouldn't be able to continue. It turns out that it wasn't. It did drop off at some point, ended up shooting 45% from the field and 37% from three, which are still really good numbers, especially for a rookie, really strong numbers, better than his college efficiency. But he was a guy that was going 41-42% from three for big stretches of time, and it did fall off. He did also end up playing 31 minutes per game last season. Injuries there. We had the limited minutes for Brook Lopez. We had Brandon Ingram injured at the end of the season, so he was playing tons of minutes at small forward, playing at power forward as well. But this season, I think things are a little bit different for Kuzma. I think him getting to 31 minutes per game is going to be challenging. He likely won't be starting on this team. You'll have Brandon Ingram and LeBron James. At the four, then you'll have JaVale McGee at center. They brought Michael Beasley in there, who will probably get minutes, I would assume, in that front court rotation. And yes, Kuzma can play at the three as well, but won't they want to play Lance Stephenson there? Incorrectly, but they probably will want to play Lance there. So while I don't see Kuzma being eliminated from the rotation, that's not going to happen. I just think he's going to find it hard to exceed what he did last season. There could be a dip in shooting percentages with those numbers. Maybe they're not as representative of what he is as a player. Plus, getting that same level of playing time without significant injuries to LeBron or to Ingram or to Beasley, or if Walton just puts Beasley and Stevenson out of the rotation completely, something that seems somewhat unlikely at this point, I think that Kuzma could find himself, if not going backwards, but at least stagnating in terms of production. And I don't think he is going to be a guy who is a top 100 player for this coming season. Last season, he was actually the 105th ranked player. I don't see him getting better than that, and I think we're going to see some of his playing time dip with those other guys brought in around him, and the way that Luke Walton could potentially use it, and we assume there's some decent health for Brandon Ingram, who missed big chunks of last season. We have to remember also, before Ingram got injured at the end of last season, Kuzma had seen his role decrease, but then Brando went out, Kuzma moved in, played starting small forward, and saw the value rise back up. So I think it's an interesting one for Kuzma, and he does have the feel of someone who may get overdrafted in fantasy drafts as we head into this season. Staying in LA, let's look at the LA Clippers, and we'll go with Milos Teodosic, a guy that I thought had pretty decent potential last season, especially when Patrick Beverley went down. But it wasn't to be. He dealt with a foot injury, a plantar fascia injury, for most of last season, only played 45 games and 25 minutes per game. The 170th ranked player averaged 9 points with 4.5 assists, shot the ball well after a poor start, 38% from three, still only 42 from the field, but he was going at like 25% from three for a big chunk of the season, started to get that going. But of course, the Clippers, they bring back Lou Williams, they bring back Avery Bradley, they bring back Patrick Beverley. There is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who they drafted there as well. Jerome Robinson as another lottery pick guard. So I think Milosz is going to find it hard at 31 years of age to get those 25 minutes per game he played last season. I would imagine that Lou Williams, Pat Beverley, and Avery Bradley are your 1, 2, and 3 guards in no particular order, leaving Milosz to be that fourth guy. And it very well could be the case that Shea does take over that role from Teodosic at some point this season. Milosz was only partially guaranteed for this season, but he picked up that player option, and then the Clippers fully guaranteed that contract. Doesn't mean he can't be waived. They did just trade away Sam Decker today to try and trim that roster. There is still probably one guy left that does need to go. Maybe that is Milosz, and he could find himself on another team with a situation that is a little bit better for him, but hasn't been determined at this point. We also had Sendarius Thornwell, who played pretty well last year as a backup guard, who could be pushing into some playing time there also. So all signs don't point to good things for Milosz for this coming season with the way the Clippers roster is currently constructed. Let's talk about the Memphis Grizzlies. I want to talk about Jermichael Green, who had a big opportunity last season with Zach Randolph gone. He was penciled in as that starting power forward, had protracted negotiations of his contract, suffered a knee injury early in the season, ended up playing not as many games as he would have hoped, only 55 games and 28 minutes, and not productive. The 160th ranked player, 10-8 with half a steal and half a block, inefficient. I don't think he's a very good player. I've said this plenty of times. I don't value him as a high value asset. And now, after the Grizzlies bring in Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., I think that Jermichael's going to struggle to get that level of playing time. They signed Kyle Anderson, who is probably best suited as a 4 rather than a 3, although he will likely be their starting 3. If Chandler Parsons can get any semblance of health, he's going to play minutes at the 4. I think Jermichael is going to really struggle to get that level of playing time that he saw last season. He's older than many people think. He has turned 28 already. He's not a high-volume scorer. He's not a defensive stats guy. He's not a high-efficiency guy. He doesn't have great per-minute numbers. And those minutes themselves are going to drop down, I would believe, this season as we see Jackson play as the backup center, but also has a real chance to be the starting power forward for this team at some point. And if not starting, at least taking away 3 to 4 of those minutes that Green plays in that position. And that's going to limit what he can do. I think his time as being even close to a borderline standard league guy are probably done at this point in his career, unfortunately. Let's look at the next team. We're going to talk Minnesota Timberwolves. Gorgui Dieng's the guy that I've listed here. Dieng was really, really limited last season under Tom Thibodeau. He brought Taj Gibson in to play at power forward. Karl Anthony Towns is the starting center, and Dieng was the next big man off the bench, along with Nemanja Bjelica, but he still only played 17 minutes because Tom Thibodeau runs nonsense rotations. Now, we have a different situation with Anthony Tolliver being signed to be brought in, and I can see him actually getting minutes over Dieng, playing as a stretch big man. I can see that being a real problem for Gorgui now, who was a guy that I have really liked as a fantasy guy, has top 50 potential if he plays 30 minutes, gets steals, gets blocks, has high field goal and free throw percentages, rebounds the ball really well. But I really worry about how this situation looks for him. They also drafted Kata Bates-Diop. Of course, we'll have to wait till about 2025 for Tom Thibodeau to give him any playing time, but another guy that plays that position that Dieng played, I think that he's going to see his playing time drop, and he'll probably only, Gorgui will only be exclusively the backup center. I don't think he'll play much at the four at all with those minutes going to Tolliver, and that's going to limit, and if Towns is playing 37 minutes a night, Big Shaq's quick maths will tell us that it's only 11 minutes available there for Gorgui at backup center, which is going to be really, really tough to have him in any sort of fantasy league, let alone any dynasty format that uses real salaries, considering he's on about $15 or $16 million per season for this upcoming year. So not a great situation for Gorgui Dieng with that signing of Anthony Tolliver in Minnesota. For the New Orleans Pelicans, Etuan Moore's the guy that I've got listed here as in potentially a worse situation. He was a bit of a surprise packet last year, played 32 minutes per game, all 82 games, and was the 126th ranked player. Averaged 12.5 points, a steal, 2.3 assists, and was incredibly efficient. 51 from the field for a starting small forward is great. 43 from three is also fantastic. But remember, we have a different situation here in New Orleans now. Yes, Rajon Rondo is gone. But he is replaced ostensibly by Lord Alfred Payton. They brought in Julius Randle. There's Nikola Mirotic there who wasn't there for all of last season. And I've heard some rumblings that they're going to be trying some Mirotic, Randle and Anthony Davis combinations with Nick playing at the three, which is going to impact what Etuan Moore can do there. I think he probably loses some playing time for this upcoming season. I don't think the efficiency can necessarily stick at that sort of an elevated level, and he just doesn't do much in any other area. So I think expecting a top 130 finish for Etuan is probably wishful thinking. He can still be solid, and perhaps we don't see much of a drop in playing time, and we don't see Mirotić being run at the three at all. I think that's a possibility. The other thing that we have is that Solomon Hill missed all of last season, and he was a guy that was the starting three or penciled in as the starting three before last season, and it's unlikely that we're going to see him be as limited as he was last year, so that could have an impact on Etuan as more. So, well, he's not a high fantasy asset by any means. He was a top 150 guy, meaning he had standard league value, and I don't think that will necessarily be the case for this upcoming season. On the Oklahoma City Thunder, I've put Nerlens Noel in here now. He is a guy, of course, that wasn't on OKC last season, played in Dallas, played sparingly in Dallas, but also in the end ended up putting up some decent enough performances, especially towards the end of last season in Dallas, showing us what he can do, getting his steals, getting his blocks, being able to put up some okay numbers at times. He had an 8-14 game in 26 minutes. He had a stretch of 5 or 6 games in a row to end the season with big defensive numbers: 5 steals, 3 blocks, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 4 steals, 1 block, then a steal, then a block, and then 1-1 in his last 7 games for the season. Really showing what he could do, where he played over 20 minutes in 6 of the last 7 games. The problem now, he goes to OKC to be Steven Adams' backup. Not likely to get minutes there. Will they look to play him at power forward instead of Jeremy Grant or Patrick Patterson? I'm not sure that's going to work that well. He has no shooting ability, no stretch ability whatsoever. So I think that Noel could have gone, if he found himself in another team where he had a battle for the center position and played 25 minutes a night, he'd be a real fantasy asset. He would be a top 100 sort of guy at the very least. Now in OKC, where there's a guaranteed starter who's going to play 33, 34 minutes per night, I think Noel is going to find it really hard to even really get that value back that he had in Dallas, especially towards the end of last season. The Phoenix Suns, this one is interesting. So many wings on this team, and you feel like TJ Warren is going to be the guy to miss out. Not only has he had considerable injury problems in the past, a back injury caused him to miss tons of games last year, only ended up with 65 of them. He played 33 minutes last season per game and was the 83rd ranked player. Josh Jackson saw himself rise in the second half of last season. I'm not a big believer in Josh Jackson. I think he really does struggle at times. But they also brought in two other wings in Trevor Ariza and McCall Bridges, who are going to eat into TJ Warren's playing time. Not to mention Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender, who aren't going to be playing tons of minutes at center this season. I don't see where Warren is getting anywhere close to the 33 minutes per game. In fact, he may be a player who sees himself tumble down the rankings more than anybody this season. His game is not well-rounded. He doesn't get steals or blocks or assists or hit threes. It comes on scoring and it comes on high efficiency. And if you're not getting minutes and not getting volume into that scoring, then your value is going to plummet. And I don't think he's probably going to be a standard league guy. In fact, he might not even be a 14-team league guy, depending on how they use Ariza, Jackson, and Bridges. But you could make the argument that at some point this season, he is the fourth of those wings. Maybe it's a stretch to say that Jackson and Bridges are both better than him, but it doesn't necessarily mean better. It's how is Kokoschkov going to use them. Warren is probably still the second best guy there behind Ariza, but if he wants to prioritize Jackson's development and Bridges' development, I'm not really sure where TJ Warren fits into that mix. He still is only, hasn't even turned 25 yet, so there is still some growth there for Teej, but I'm not really sure that we're going to see that same level of production that we saw last season from him, and it could be a pretty steep drop-off for TJ Warren. Surprisingly, Portland was a team where I found it a little bit tough to find someone who was going to find themselves in a worse situation last season, because overall, I believe the Portland Trailblazers got worse this season. But one guy that I did highlight was Evan Turner, and that's because Mo Harkless missed so much time last season, only played 59 games and 21 minutes per game, If Harkless is healthy, he's the starting three, and he probably should push to 27 or 28 minutes per night, meaning that Evan Turner's 26 minutes that he played last season are in real jeopardy. They also brought in Nick Stauskas, Sauce Castilla, not that he's a big threat to playing time. There's Anthony Simons, Gaz Trent Jr., who are in that mix there, Jake Layman also plays at the three, and Seth Curry playing at the two. Maybe we see more Seth Lillard and CJ McCollum lineup. So I don't think that Evan, who wasn't even a top 200 guy last season, but this is important for deeper league things. I think that Evan is probably going to struggle to get the same amount of playing time he had last season. He'd already seen his assist rate drop considerably in Portland versus what it was in Boston, and I think the playing time could dip even further with Mo Harkless getting a larger role this season and those other players that I mentioned coming into consideration. For the Sacramento Kings, this whole rotation, there's disaster written all over this, and I have no idea what Dave Yeager's going to do. Last season, Willie Cauley-Stein inexplicably played only 28 minutes per game. It should have been development time. It should have been 31 to 32 a night, but no, it was 28. He played in 73 games. It was the 115th ranked player, averaging 13 and 7 with almost a block and 1.1 steals, and the efficiency started to creep up. But of course, Harry Giles is now healthy. They brought in the draft Marvin Bagley III. They traded for Deontay Davis. They brought in Nemanja Bjelica, who plays at the four as well. So Cauley-Stein, while I think he can be a solid player, what are the Kings going to be prioritizing? Are we going to have the bullshit charade of Zach Randolph starting again? It's Dave Yeager. I wouldn't be putting it past him. And then who starts at center? Is it Will? Do they have Marvin Bagley alongside Zach Randolph for the worst defensive front court in the NBA? Is that a possibility? Where does Scal Labissiere fit in this mix? So I think the realistic scenario is that Cauley-Stein starts, probably next to Randolph, maybe next to Bagley, but with two extra bodies thrown into that front court, which was already a mess last season in Giles and Bagley, how is he going to exceed that playing time? Now, maybe Yeager pulls his finger out of his ass and looks at it and goes, hey, let's see if we can play 30 minutes tonight. Let's see if him and Bagley can go together and run together and form a decent combination. Or will we get Costa Kufos and Randolph and Giles and Labissiere and Davis and whatever other bullshit you can pull out there to try and get into that mix? Are all these things that are possibilities? So I think that Cauley-Stein, while he may not necessarily regress, but he probably won't have a big opportunity to take a big step forward as he heads into his fourth NBA season, because that rotation, while it should be clear cut, it won't be because of the way the coaching staff runs things. There is a real risk there. For the San Antonio Spurs, pains me to say this, but my fellow Australian, Pat Mills, I think could find himself in a troublesome situation for this coming year. He played 26 minutes per game, all 82 games last season, was barely a top 200 player, hit 2 threes and 10 points with 3 assists. DeMar DeRozan comes in, and it's unlikely that Greg Popovich is going to be playing DeMar DeRozan the 24 or 25 minutes per night that he played Danny Green, which enabled Pat Mills to get so many minutes at shooting guard. So with DeRozan getting his 33 or 34 minutes, that's going to have to come at the expense of someone. Derek White looked fantastic in Summer League. Does he take some minutes away from Mills? Well, you could say that he should be the primary backup behind DeJounte Murray rather than Mills, but there's at least another name in there who could be in that mix. They brought back Bryn Forbes. They re-signed Marco Bellinelli as well, another player who can come in and play at the two. Forbes at the two also. So where does Mills sit? I think he will struggle to get that level of 26 minutes per game that he got last season, even though the Spurs did lose Kawhi. They did bring in other players, in Bellinelli, in DeRozan, with the ascension of Derek White, with rookie Lonnie Walker IV as well, who plays that same position. I think it's going to be hard for Pat to get that value back and to be that streaming three-point option he was last year when he knocked in 2 per game. So it's not looking great, I think, for Pat Mills in terms of being able to replicate what he did last season, and that contract could end up looking pretty disastrous by the end of it. The last team I want to look at is the Utah Jazz. I think that Royce O'Neal, who was a rookie surprise last season and had his moments, ended up only playing 17 minutes per game, but started a big chunk of playing time when Rubio was out. They'd shift the Donovan Mitchell over to point guard. O'Neal, with the hopefully fully healthy Rubio, with a fully healthy Dante Exum as well, with the drafting of Grayson Allen, with the return of Thabo Sefolosha, those minutes he was getting at the two and at the three, it might be a little bit hard for him to get that same level of playing time. Now, he is in his second season. He could be seeing a growth in his playing time, in his ability, in everything that he does for this team. But I just think those other guys, Tarbo, Dante, Jay Crowder there for a full season, Jingle and Joe, Ravishing Rick, the Don, all these guys seem to be ahead of Royce. I'd put Royce ahead of Grayson and ahead of Alec Burks at this point, but that might not be the case all season, and Grayson could take that step ahead of O'Neill. So, again, for those of you in deeper leagues, in dynasty formats, I think that O'Neill saw almost a perfect storm of him being able to produce, did it well, really fantastic defensive stuff, but this coming season, finding that spot in the rotation for him every night is going to be a much tougher challenge for Quinn Snyder. That will wrap us up for today, looking at the worst situations in the West for players. If you disagree, let me know on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and Instagram at @LockedOnFantasyBasketball. Make sure you are subscribing and leaving a 5-star review. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Smash subscribe, hit a thumbs up, leave a comment, share, tell your friends, all that stuff. You know how it goes. Good luck in the drafts, rookie drafts, dynasty initial drafts. Plenty of stuff coming. I've planned out podcasts all the way through the start of the regular season. Tons of content coming for you guys, but I'm always open for suggestions. Looking forward to kicking off the Dynasty Only podcast as well in September. That will likely kick off. So lots of good stuff coming. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Crawford.